Sounds like a plan. I appreciate it, sir. I'll go ahead and clear the line here and see how long your conversation goes tonight. KI-4-GOD.
Thanks for coming in there with the questions. We're always happy to answer if we can. Wish that to you keep abreast of that, and we'll go. You know, just keep me in the loop. We'll get together and we'll set something up for that Trail Life folks down there. It won't be a problem. We have additional check-ins all the way through the alphabet for Blue Ridge 2 meter net. Call KI-4DOS. First up is WW4JET, Mr. Matthew, up there in Table Rock. Matthew, I hope you didn't have to evacuate up there, did you? WW4JET, Mr. Matthew, you still around? Here, Matthew, hopefully you didn't have to mess with that fire or anything. But next up on the step is Mr. Steve, KB0KBJ, up there in Clear Lake, South Dakota. Mr. Steve, good talking to Miss Megan a while ago, but now it's your turn there, young man. What have you been up to?
Yeah, good evening, Gary. KI-4DOS in the net, KB0KBJ. Yeah, let's see. Fixed the garage door. Garage door today. That thing was all jacked up and gone sideways. So we took it all apart. I don't know what was wrong with the thing, but we got her working. She runs. It goes up and down nicely now. So I feel good about that. That's not something I usually do, but we got it figured out. So that's good. Yeah, that's one thing I always like about the folks on this repeater in the area down there. Willing to step up and help generally. So that's good to hear about getting together there for that Trail Lights. I haven't heard of that one myself. Might have to look into that organization. One thing you want to do is to have somebody on the other end. There's nothing that loses folks' interest faster than nothing happening when you unkey, you know. If you have to plant somebody behind a bush, go ahead. But I can remember one instance. It was at the Lake Area Technical Institute, or college as it's called now in Watertown. They were going to do a ham radio demonstration now, and they were sending up a balloon with a little beeper on it, you know. And I don't know why they chose the frequency that they did. They chose 440 AM. Well, the balloon, it was a good size, didn't it? There was a good crowd of kids out there all interested in this, and had their beam antennas out there to ham, local ham did, and he had like springs on the back of his shoes. I don't know why that sticks out, but I think it was because I hadn't ever seen springs on the back of his shoes. I guess he liked cushy, springy shoes. Anyhow, they let the balloon go, and I had gone there earlier, like weeks earlier, and I couldn't hear it outside the building. I thought maybe it was the brick walls. We had been testing it. There was two other hams involved, and I was just kind of like interested, so I was there. Yeah, let the balloon go. The thing floated above the building, and they lost signal. That was it. You could still pop it with a BB gun, and maybe they should have. The thing drifted off over. I followed it for 10 minutes going up in the sky with my binoculars, but yeah, that didn't hold the students' interest too long. They kind of just wandered off. So much for that. And another instance I remember was I was listening on a website I was involved with one time called globaltuners.com. I had my radio online. So you could go, and it's still out there, you can go there and get online and you could tune my radio and listen to my radio, whatever you tuned it to. You couldn't talk on it, so anybody could use it. Well, so I was, there was others around the world who did this, and I liked listening to the Broome, Australia, which is Western Australia, small town Western Australia. And so I'd listen to that one once in a while, amongst others. And I tuned it to the space station, and they had on at that time they had on the space station they had the radio, ham radio up there in crossband mode, so you could talk up to it and it'd tell you, you know, when I used it here, it was just I could talk to East Coast and West Coast through the space station on 2 meters 440, you know. Pretty good location being here in the middle of the country for doing that, obviously. So anyhow, I was listening to the space station go overhead, this Broome, Australia, listening to it online, and I heard a guy. It was quiet, there was no noise, which is not how you would hear it usually. When it comes over the United States, it just lights up with all the ham radio traffic when they put it in that mode. But over Australia, there's obviously not many people who are into ham radio. But I heard one guy calling, and he called and called and called, and nobody came back to him. And I was like, man, that's got to be kind of frustrating. He's got a good signal, too. You know, I can't talk to him because I'm just been using his internet thing for listening. But I did hit record on my computer, and I recorded his call sign and, you know, him calling. And I looked up his call sign, and I sent him the recording of that, of him calling. And I'm glad I did, because he sent me back an email. He's like, boy, am I glad you did. I had 20 students out here, and I was telling them how I'm going to talk to the space station, but he didn't have no evidence of it because nobody was talking to him back, you know. And so he's like, I'm glad you recorded that, because he was able to play it for his students and show that he did get into the space station. So that was kind of a partial bust, but also a success as it ended up being. So, yeah, I remember other things too. Let me let a break here. I remember once when me and Dave, who hosts this here, Echolink, we tried it on one of his RC airplanes. We put a 2 meter 440 cross banding handheld. An ICOM, what was that thing? I don't know, some ICOM handheld. In one of his RC airplanes, and one of his Cubs, 8 foot wingspan, had to snort and lift to carry it up in the air. We had a few of you folks down there listening to see if we couldn't just fly that thing way up in the air and hear us talking on this flying repeater, essentially. We got it up there. Dave got it up, and I was doing the keying up, you know. Dave got it up in the air. I keyed up, but we didn't have, at that time, they didn't have digital kind of locked communications. I don't know the technical terms anymore. Between the radio on the airplane and Dave's hand, you know, his remote control. So when I keyed up, it just killed the engine and locked the controls into a right-hand turn. And Dave says, it's coming down. So as soon as I unkeyed, thankfully it unkeyed up in the plane, and he was able to glide it back in. And I tried it a time or two as he was gliding it back down, but every time I did, it would just stiffen up his controls and get rigor mortis, and he couldn't control it. So that was our one attempt at that. Derek, back to you, Gary.
KBJ, Mr. Steve, up here in Clear Lake, South Dakota. Well, Steve, I was sitting here wondering, you were talking about them using UHF for their demonstration and for the school kids, or the school children, and then when you said AM, I said, oh my goodness, that's going to be a mess. Sorry that didn't work out too well. But, I was thinking about the time that you were, you were taking pilot's license, your training. You were going to get your pilot's license. And you end up in a little old Piper Cub of some sort. I don't know what it was. Now I don't remember. But you carried your HT, and boy, we could talk long ways on simplex that way. Of course, you know, that's line of sight. Worked out real well, I thought. But, gosh, talk to the space station. I've never tried to contact the space station. Probably should, you know, be another thing I could stick on the wall here, I guess. Or, you know, put over there in my collection of QSL cards or that sort of stuff. But never tried to contact them. But I'm glad that you recorded that gentleman in Australia. That way, if you know, he could at least hear it, you know, you know that he was getting in, even though nobody was coming back to him. And you're absolutely correct. You know, if you're gonna have a demonstration, you need two people to do it, but one on each end. So that always seems to help. There was you probably remember there was a school teacher over in Spartanburg that used to get on the repeater every so often. He would take a radio to class and then demonstrate 2 meters for his students in his classroom. I don't know if you ever talked to him or not, but I talked to him on several different occasions. And yeah, about the RC airplanes, you just desensitized his receiver up there. You know, been locked everything up. You were overriding everything for him. But I'm glad that when you unkeyed it, that he got control of it enough to be able to glide it back down so it didn't crash and break everything up.
Yeah. Yeah, when you got 5 watts transmitting just inches away from milliwatts, it's going to kind of, it don't matter the frequency, it's going to overwhelm it. Dave did show me later when he had digital control that it didn't affect it at all. So that was, of course, back in the analog days, and they were starting to switch to digital, and then Dave bought some. I had moved up here by the time he had done that, I think. So we didn't ever get around to that again. But, yeah, you know, if you're talking there on the air, it don't matter. You could flip to this frequency or any repeater, and really they're not going to know the difference, you know, as long as somebody comes back. Like I said, you hide them behind a bush or something in a porta potty or wherever. Something's got to come back. That's certainly helpful. And yeah, I haven't I did do it at field day once. That's kind of a demonstration of the same sort, you know. I did it up on field day here. We have a AM radio station that is local there in Watertown, and come field day, you get out in the air, and well, they had a morning show, and you could call in, and they would have guests, and so I went there one time to promote field day, and I talked about it and such, and I must have done a well enough job to interest some folks, because I noticed a few more folks show up at our field day, was it a day later or 2 days later or something? Then maybe it was the same day that I had gone on. I did see a few more folks wander by and check out our field day setup, which I was doing digital then, and the other guys were doing phone. So I had some solar powered snake's nests of wires and such. It was held together with C clamps and, you know, battery cable, battery jumper cables and such. You know, it was pretty impressive. Probably more impressive than actually the high end stuff was the tangle of wires I had. But in fact, it was so impressive, I had other people taking pictures of it. That's how impressive it was there.
That's pretty cool. People do get entertained when they see a jumble of wires, especially if they don't know what they're doing, where they go and this sort of thing. And they look down and they see that tangle, that mess of wires, they say, oh my goodness, I don't know if I want to get in this or not. But of course, back of my desk looks like, it looks like that all the time. You just can't see it. I've got all the jumpers and everything. I've got all of the equipment I've got sitting here on my desk. It's a jumble mess when you pull it out. But, it is what it is. But I think we'll enjoy that if we get put on a presentation for that group. I always like to help young people if we can. Folks my age and the folks that are a little older than I am, we're not going to be around forever. We need the younger people to pick it up and carry the ball for a little bit and keep the hobby going.
Exactly. You know what's always... would be kind of impressive if you get pictures or even video. That'd be tough to do. Tougher, I should say. Not tough, but tougher. But you could do SSTV and receive something, perhaps. There's generally somebody squawking away on 14.233, I think. I think that's the frequency. Sending a picture. All you gotta do is get the interface. Actually, all you need the cord from the radio to a computer and pull up the program and let it sit there and wait, That's an idea. Talk about jump tangle of wires and such. I had my radio in my vehicle just sitting there. Kind of bouncing around, not even screwed down on the center console. It just happened to fit right there, I take the cup holder out and the bracket would fit right in there, no problem about it. So I didn't bother screwing it down. So I had my coax cable for the antenna, and I had my speaker or microphone cable, and I had a power cable, and I had another external speaker so I could put the speaker and jam it in my headrest behind my head so I could hear. And that was minimum of what I had. Who knows if I had anything else. So I had a few wires there. And I remember one of my buddies jumped in. He looks at that. And I'm like, yeah, what's that? And I was like, oh, that's ham radio. He's like, you ever thought of going wireless? Which has always struck me funny.
A lot of the things that are going with the Bluetooth and that sort of thing, but I don't know. I kind of like the stretchy cords and all of that stuff that goes with it. But I don't have anything hooked up to Bluetooth right now. I do have a headset that's wireless. That's in the closet over here. I hadn't drug it out, hooked it up yet, and that sort of thing. But I'm liable to do that. It's not any time. You just don't never know what I'm liable to do here at the house. But, a lot of people, they don't like wires anymore.
No, Sven, that was his name. That was my buddy's name. Sven, he was ahead of the game. Have you ever thought of going wireless? talking about that, I was told by one of the hams around here, he told me about a radio, and I'm going to have to ask him because I looked for the thing, I couldn't find it. I thought it was a BTEC, like the letter B. But anyhow, he told me about a radio that it's pretty wireless. It's got, he uses his phone as the screen. And he's got the main, I guess all he's got is a power cord going to the radio, which is under his seat, and an antenna. He's got his phone as a screen and the microphone, I believe, or a speaker, maybe, and he's got a wireless handheld microphone. I don't think that doubles as a speaker. Maybe I don't know where the speaker noise is coming from, where the audio is coming from. Maybe that is wired too, but anyhow, you're using a phone and a wireless mic to run, so I guess that'd be fairly wireless. I gotta check it out when I see him next time.
KDOS in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with KB0KBJ, Mr. Steve up there in Clear Lake, South Dakota. I've seen a couple of those advertised. I don't remember what they were, that sort of thing. But, you know, Kenwood TS-2000, they came out with a version with no knobs or anything on the front of it. You controlled it through your computer. It was all, I don't know if you'd call that software defined or what, but anyway, you controlled it through your computer. But the whole face of it was just a piece of stamped sheet metal that said Kenwood across the front of it. I don't know if you remember those or not. But I'm sure they've got other radios that are the same way. But yeah, it won't be long. Our cell phones, as sophisticated as they are getting. They're pretty much wireless except for charging the batteries on them. And I guess the only drawback with a radio would be the size of the battery, maybe, or the amperage draw, or I don't know what it would be. Probably the physical size of it would be the limiting thing. Because it has to have so many amps to run everything else in the radio. Maybe they'll work all that out, and we'll have wireless radios, and then I don't know what we'll use for antenna. Maybe they'll just jump over to a power line or something. You know, they're doing broadband over power lines now. Messes everything up, so might as well let them mess something else up.
KI4DOS and NAC KB0KBJ. Yeah, that antenna business, just how it is. Can't really get around that, as far as the frequency you're on and the length it's got to be and all. They've obviously done a really good job on cell phone antennas, though. Pack them in these phones, you know, make them work. If we had the money to do the research in ham radio like cell phone companies do, you'd probably see it advance pretty quickly. But there's still that hole. How are you going to do 160 meters off your cell phone? Or something the size of your cell phone? Wow. That would be some serious package in the back of your radio. Big loading coil there. I do remember the TS-2000 with our faceplate. I think they sold that. They had some kind of internet thing, kit business. It was basically another radio face. And you tie that into the internet. Have probably a similar one at the house, and you could go anywhere in the country, and I'm sure they still do. Go anywhere in the country and just tune your radio wherever you're at, and tune it back home the same way, you know. So yeah. Well, weather-wise, it's been nice up here. I'll tell you what, we had. Did you? You got those videos I sent you and pictures recently of the lake around here?
Like 2 feet of ice on it, and then like a week or so later, maybe 2 weeks later, you sent me another picture and there was no ice on it. That was amazing.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen the ice come off the lakes that fast around here or not. I don't believe I have. It usually takes about a month from, you know, when it starts getting on weather until the time it's finally gone, but man, we just had warm weather, and I don't think we've had 70 yet, but up in the 60s, wind once it grabs a hold of that ice, it just starts tossing those waves around, it just smashes that ice up, you know. We've had some pretty stout winds 25 miles an hour all day long. So, it just ripped up the ice fast. And it was a week from where, 2 foot thick to no ice in a week. That's really fast. Geese have been flying over and seen robins here. Oh, I guess it was probably a week and a half or so ago already. And of course, the next day it got cold and chilly and snowed, and then you see robins out there on the lawn, all like, what did we come up here for? I thought it was supposed to be. Robins always do that. They always got time just before the next cold snap, you know. But anyhow, yeah, drizzling a little here tonight. It's kind of interesting. We haven't seen rain a whole lot. Yesterday, I was coming up the interstate. It was blowing like crazy out of the northwest. Yeah, 25, 30 mile an hour, jerking the truck around as I'm going along. And I looked up ahead, probably a few miles, and I seen this huge dust cloud. And I'm like, that's interesting. There must be a farmer stirring around out there in the field or something. He's really stirring up the dust, if he is. I took note of the shape of it. It kind of looked like a bowl, you know, the way the dust cloud was. And then it kind of just got, the dust cloud kind of got blown away with the strong wind. And I got up there, and I, kind of in that area where it had been, looked out in the direction off to the east there. I didn't see any tractors or anything stirring, no fires. It's been dry, so maybe it could have been a fire, grass fire, but no, it was nothing. And I noticed the clouds were kind of in a line in that area. I think I seen a tornado touch down for a brief bit. I didn't see no funnel, typical funnel shape, but what I believe, when a tornado hits the ground, you see a little bowl, kind of a dust kick up. It was awfully big. I'll tell you, it wasn't no little dust devil, in my opinion. I mean, I wouldn't say maybe quite a quarter mile wide, but that'd be pretty big. But it certainly looked big. And big bolts for a dust devil. Not a dust devil, they ain't nothing but a little, 100 foot wide thing. And that might even be a big one, This was a whole lot bigger than that. It looked to be a lot bigger, so. I'm not sure what I've seen, but I'm kind of thinking it was a bit of a tornado there trying to swarm up. But with the winds we had, it just kind of ripped it apart, and that was the end of that there. But that was interesting,
Steve, I bet that was interesting to look at and watch a little bit. I've seen, we call them dust devils down here, little wind spouts that lift the leaves and the dirt and all of that stuff. But, they don't go anywhere, but they're real small, They're not, but just maybe 2 or 3 feet wide or something of that nature. They wouldn't be anywhere near that. But the atmosphere does some crazy things as far as that goes. I'm sure you've been seeing a little bit about the wildfires that we got going on around here. We've got them up in up here at Table Rock and. 6 Mile Mountain just got burnt pretty good not too long ago. We got about 2 or 3 different wildfires going on around the area here now. And the winds aren't helping that at all. And wind at 25 mile an hour winds, but if it did, boy, I tell you what, we'd be in a world of hurt. But they're evacuating a whole bunch of folks up in that area, in North Carolina, South Carolina, both. And, the wildfires is just something crazy. And, of course, we could use some rain, which we have not had any. We got 4/100ths of an inch 2 or 3 days ago, 2 days ago. Which wasn't enough to hardly wet the ground good, but we could use some rain as well. It's been kind of dry, and with everything going on, they've got a red flag, you know, a band on the outside burning right now, which is a good thing. And hopefully we can, or I say we, they can get the fires contained, and we won't have to worry about that again.
Yeah, what I seen, it was more than a dust devil. It was up above the trees, the dust was. And it was wider than that, so. It was interesting. Well, yeah, I didn't heard about that. I heard about them a while back. I guess it was down near Columbia. Maybe something up that way, but I guess I hadn't heard about them recently. Yeah, that's pretty dry, I guess. We got nothing but grass up here, but it'll burn too. We've had some of that being an issue. But it's pretty easy. Well, you got the winds to blow it, but it's pretty easy to get to, you know. They had fire out there on the interstate a few weeks back, and I know I just read about some more trucks kicking off sparks, wheel bearings locking up, one truck wheel bearing locked up or something, and brake rotors are shattering or falling apart and lighting the grass on fire next to the interstate and going down the interstate lighting fires. And started his whole load of hay on fire, and they had to push it off in the ditch and put that thing out there for a few hours doing that. But yeah, we got access to it, you know. Out there in the mountains where you guys are at, man, they can get up in them gullies and go zipping up and down over hill and over dale, and you can't follow it too easy.
Follow it, you can't keep up with it, but they're using quite a number of helicopters and things, which has helped some, I'm sure, but you know, the guys that get up there and do the back burning, digging the trenches and you can't drive a bulldozer up the side of a mountain to make a fire break. So, my hat's off to those fellas that are out there, you know, risking life and limb to get these fires under control and get them put out. But it's a terrible mess right now. I rode up to Traveler's Rest, or just above Traveler's Rest, and the smoke was so thick up there you couldn't see the mountains. You know, it was terrible. And the further you got north, it got kind of cleared out again. But standing on my back porch, Steve, you could see the smoke plume coming up from where the fire is up there at Table Rock. And then from if you look to the east, it was just gray all the way across. And if you look west, it went from that gray and it went to blue skies. It was strange looking.
Good to know. Kind of reminds me of the smoke we get around here sometimes. It seems like the last few years we've been having it pretty steady. In about, I don't know, July, August. You know, it'll just come from Canada, way up there in Canada. I guess everything's cooking up there too. And it'll come drifting on down here. And there was a few years ago, it was so strong. I mean, you could see it in town, just looking down the street, and your throat was burning all day long, and it was strong. Most of the time it don't get to the point where you can smell it, but you can see it. You know, the sunlight gets a little yellow when the sun's overhead. It's kind of yellow sunlight instead of clear. And sun will come up in the morning, you're looking, you're saying, well, I don't see any clouds, but I don't see the sun either. And it will have to, I've seen it. It'll be 9 o'clock in the morning before you finally see the sun itself coming up, you know, getting up there higher in the sky where it's having to punch through less atmosphere, less smoke. It'll be 9 o'clock in the morning before you finally can see the sun itself. And we must be, then you go look, must be some wildfires in Canada again. Go look online. Yeah, they're burning away up there again.
It's not just us that are having to deal with the fires and stuff around here, but, well, we're the only ones that have to deal with it around here. But there's other places that are under the same conditions, you know, and, the wildfires just devastating all kinds of stuff. And one of my biggest fears, I guess, Steve, would be like, we might be like California, you know, we have all these wildfires and they burn off all the underbrush and the stuff that holds the soil in place, and then we get the downpours and heavy rains, and now we got mudslides to contend with. I hope that does not happen, but that's kind of what I got in mind.
TF4 DOS in the net, KB0 KBJ. Yeah, in the hilly country, that's definitely a possibility, no doubt. When I was living in Washington State, it rained a lot out there. But it didn't rain much, it just rained often. That's a better way to put it. Like all day, all night. You could just go jump in a shower and stand there all day. That's pretty much how it was. So I was working in that stuff, working outside, doing a job, of course, where what better job could you not get away from the rain falling out of the sky than go stand under the eaves of a house and put on siding. So that's what I did. And I just got used to it. You had to. If you're going to stick with the job, you're going to have to get used to getting rained on. It didn't matter how much rain gear you put on, it seemed like you were wet. So I didn't really think of it much, but one day, I guess, it must have been raining a little heavier than the usual drizzle. And, it rained like 2 inches that day. Well, for us, anywhere where you get thunderstorms, they don't get thunderstorms out west. It's just steady rain, but no thunderstorms. You don't got the hot, cold clash of air, generally, you know. But that Pacific Ocean air comes in, hits the mountains, and drops the rain. And so to get 2 inches was a lot. And they got hilly country like down there, out west, and where all that rain got funneled down in all them gullies and continued to get funneled together, and it caused quite a mess. Woodland, Washington, which was a ways up the road from where I was up the interstate. I was near Portland, Oregon area, across the river into Battleground, Washington. Woodland, which was about 30 miles up the interstate, which ran along the Columbia River there, they got flooded out good. And I remember seeing Clinton's helicopter convoy choppering along through the sky as he was going to check it out. So, the other time I seen Clinton, I was down in South Carolina. I was standing there next to 385. We were working on a job. I mean, the job was right next to the interstate, and he was busy, you know. 10 o'clock in the morning, I told my brother, I was like, hey, there's no traffic on the interstate anymore. What's the deal? And I thought about it, and I said, well, there had been a lot of police on every overpass between the airport and downtown. That's right, there was about three cops on every overpass. Well, we sat there and looked, and pretty soon up the interstate comes the whole convoy of cars and such going up back to the airport. I thought, I wonder what would happen if I threw a rock at them. I better not.
Oh, my goodness. This is KI4DOS and the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with KB0 KBJ. Well, Steve, I tell you, I don't believe I would have thrown a rock at police officers on the bridges. And I've seen that more times than one. And I've run down the interstate beside the Columbia River, I don't know, many times, because I used to run out there west coast, and the main run was Portland, Oregon. We'd pick up a load of truck tires in Spartanburg and haul them out there. And that was a good run, and, seeing the guys out there windsurfing up and down the Columbia River, and then all you see all the salmon in there stacked up like cordwood. Yeah, oh gosh, it's just amazing. Beautiful sight. Hang on just a minute, Steve. I got another EchoLink station. Let me see if I can get this EchoLink station. EchoLink stations only for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call KI4DOS. I got an EchoLink station up. His name is Bob. Bob, if you don't have audio capability, shoot me a text message and I'll get you logged in that way. Over. He dropped off there, Steve. So back to you. I was talking about the Columbia River and running right beside the interstate. I don't know for to get a tractor trailer from Portland over into Washington, you had to drive a long ways, because you had to go. Wasn't no bridge right there in and around Portland that the trucks could cross that I know of.
Yeah, there's a long ways between bridges, but it's a big river. Unless you've been out there, you don't realize how big of a river that is, how wide, and how important it is, all the traffic and such that goes up and down that river, because there ain't really any other way through those Cascade Mountains other than along the river. No easy way. So it makes it pretty important, and stands the reason why back in the day when the Oregon Trail folks, that's the way they went, was down that river. Yeah, I was working there in, what was the name of that town? I can't remember. It was a town that had the Bridge of the Gods. Kind of an old truss type bridge. It was in a narrow part of the river there. They're building a motel. It's still there. You go visit that motel. It's on the Oregon side. It's just east of the bridge on the Oregon side. You go look at it on Google Earth or Maps or whatever you want. I helped frame that thing up. But I was standing there up on the wall, and there's the interstate, there's a train track, there's a bridge going across, and across the river I can see another train track, another road, Highway 14 I think it is, and then there's the traffic that's going up and down the river, and I thought, man, this is a lot of interstate, or a lot of aerial traffic, you know, it's obviously a well-used road. But yeah, that was... So since you traveled there, I got to ask you, I remember when I first went out there, it was about April, and it was raining. And I started on down there on the interstate, and I got to a certain point near, across the river from Calamus, Washington, I think it's called. And I ran into one potent smell. I'd never smelled anything like it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I have smelled that, but I never did find out what it was. I didn't want to know.
Well, it's that same smell you smell when you go to the Waynesville Hamfest. They got one up there winding along up that way, too. Paper mill. I went across the river and traveled to 14 on the other side, and you could go drive down the road and you see these... It's a paper pulp mill or something, yeah. And, it smells like skunk or sewer or something. It'll make your eyes water. You know, I'd never run into that smell before in my life. And I was like, oh, wow, what kind of area am I moving into here? I've traveled that road where, and seen where they do it. They've got huge ponds, man-made, I believe, the other man-made, whether dug out or kind of an above-ground swimming pool type of affair, but huge. And out in the middle, they got a bubbler, and it's all green. And you're like, what I'm looking at definitely matches the smell. I think I'll keep on moving before my eyeballs melt.
KOS and the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with KB0, KBJ. I can believe that, Steve. I had not associated it. I didn't see the paper mills and that sort of thing. But they used to have them up there in North Carolina. I hadn't been up through there in a long, long, long time either. I've been up to the Waynesville Ham Fest, but I don't know if they've closed those places or not, or just cleaned up the smell or what. But it's amazing regardless. But I didn't associate that smell with the paper paper plants up there around, up there above Asheville. But now that you mention it, that's pretty much what it smelled like, just sulfur.
Yep, that's exactly it. Yeah, so I moved out there and it kept raining. And it rained and rained and rained and rained some more. Yeah, that was first spring I was out there, and I was just, that didn't bother me a bit. I'm doing my own thing. I deal with this. Second spring come along, and I was like, ooh, it still rains a lot around here. The third spring come along, and I was like, I had to move a fellow. He was leaving the area and going to North Carolina, and I was visiting his place, and he said, how about you drive me my pickup truck with three horses in it and a picnic table on top of the horse trailer down to North Carolina for me. I said, right on, man. He said, here's the credit card. And here's my 1974 Ford Ranger. That was when they were full-sized. So me and another fella towed that whole works across the country with a 15-gallon tank in that Ford Ranger, filled that thing up. It got about 10 miles a gallon. 150 miles, you know. And there he is out there in Utah. We started making it between gas stations. There was a lot of fuel went down to me across that trip. So once I got to North Carolina, I decided to visit my brother down there. And I got down there and I said, wow, it's a lot nicer here. So I moved and I left the West Coast, the wet coast, and made another move. But that was back in 97 before I was on the radio so much.
That you have lived from one coast to the other and a lot of places in between. But that's amazing. I don't know that I would have told somebody I'd drive a pickup truck pulling a horse or horses from the West Coast to the East Coast, because there's a bunch of them places, bunches of stretches of road out there that you can go 150, 200, 300 miles almost and not see a gas station anywhere. So I can understand you running out of gas.
Yeah, we had to keep a good eye on the tank, on the gas gauge, that is. Let's see, about the only time it really kind of slowed us down with that small tank was in the usage of fuel. We had left Salt Lake City area at about 3 o'clock in the morning because we were just driving, we didn't stop or nothing. And we got east of Salt Lake and we pulled into a gas station and it was closed. It was 4 o'clock. And the other fellow was with me, said, well, we should go back to the last gas station and get some fuel. I said, why? Well, they're open. I said, yeah, this place opens at 6 o'clock. We'll just sit here and wait. Oh, you got to go get gas. I said, listen, if we have enough gas to get back to that station, fill up and come back here, it'll be 6 o'clock. We'll just wait here. Oh, okay. No point in running around with the horses just because we need some gas. So that's what we did. That was the only only time we really had to work around that gas versus distance thing. I best let you go. We stretching it along as long as me and Dwight used to do it. Probably even longer. You have yourself a good evening, Jay, and say hey to Joe there. Carry forward, DOS and net, KB0, KBJ.
Hey, Steve, you and Miss Megan have a wonderful evening. Take care of all those beautiful children you've got. Tell them all we said hello, give them all a hug, and Joy said to give Megan a especially big hug from her. And we'll talk to you later. Enjoyed it, as always, Steve. Look forward to doing it again sometime soon. 73 there, young man. Talk to you later. We have additional check-ins all the way through the alphabet for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call KI4DOS. Up for comments, or is there anyone else that would like to make a comment? Call KI4DOS. Let's wrap it up. I'll submit my net report, and then we'll close it out. We've got a grand total of 67. Appreciate each and every one of you out there in Radio Land. Y'all come back again tomorrow night. Mr. Matt, WG4MC, will be calling to the best of my knowledge and Rider's Cramp. This is KI4DOS, now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. With our thanks for all those folks checked in with us, we will now return the repeater to normal amateur use. 73, good night, God bless. This is KI4DOS, clear.